The following is a paid program for the KLIV Tasting Room with Joseph George Fine Wines. Views expressed in this program are those of the host and not necessarily those of the station, its management, or other advertisers.
Hi, this is Bert George. We are doing a new segment on KLIV called The Tasting Room. So each week, hopefully I'll come on and give you a little knowledge about the wine business today. So who I am is, my name again is Bert George from Joseph George Wines here in San Jose. I am third generation in the wine business and third generation here in San Jose. My grandfather, Joseph George, started our business in 1940. I grew up with it and just absolutely love it. What I like to say is our family was into wine long before wine was in. Back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the wine business, as you can imagine, was completely different than what you see today. Up in the Napa Valley, there were probably, a handful at the most, big wineries that produced all the wine. If you think of the old Charles Krug, Beaulieu, Behringer, these were the guys that that started our business, and frankly, it was the families here in this valley, the old San Martin Winery over on Ozere, I think fondly of that. It was totally different. Wine was just something that you had at the table, and it wasn't really an elitist thing. It was just something you drank with dinner. So fast forward in the 60s and early 70s, wine started to become very, very popular. And back in 1967, we built a beautiful building on Coleman Avenue near the airport. And there was 3,500 square feet designated specifically for the wines that we were importing at the time. We imported Chateau Lafite, all the Bordeaux, the big Mouton, the Burgundies and things. But we also started with the higher-end Napa Valley wines. Beaulieu was probably the biggest name in wine. People that remember Georges de Latour, I sure do. It was a big deal, and it was $12 a bottle, and that was the best that we had in Napa at the time. So that was the big collector back then. So fast forward, we built this beautiful building, had specific air-conditioned, soundproof, vibration-proof room to really store and age these really expensive wines that we were taking care of. Then in the 70s, that's when the Napa Valley and Sonoma Valley wine business really took off. That's where you started to have wine by the glass. That was something new. Late 70s, early 80s, Chardonnay was really something big. Every restaurant, you'd see people drinking Chardonnay by the glass. So that's when things really took off. Collectors started to collect not only BV, but some new brands, some really fine small production brands like Dunn Vineyards came in. That was really a big deal if you can get a hold of some Dunn Vineyards. Fast forward a little bit, 17 years ago, our family purchased some property up in Yountville, up in the Napa Valley, and we grow Sauvignon Blanc on our little place. And 20 years ago, we started our wine shop on Meridian Avenue, for those of you that have come in. What I wanted to do was sell our neighbors' wines. So from Sonoma and Napa, people I've dealt with for many, many years, I sell their wines. A little more exclusive, our red wine program starts about $30 a bottle, and our white wine program starts about $20. We don't sell anything outside of California at all, which is kind of unique for a wine shop. 100% California. We don't even sell champagnes. We have California sparkling wines like Schramsberg is our big one, and we're so proud of that, to have those in the shop. Our ports are not from Portugal. Mainly our ports are from St. Helena, from the Prager family, which is, it's really fun to have John Prager come down and pour his ports for everybody. And so that's where we are. So coming up, I've got a guest. Everybody wants to know that. The main thing about the KLIV Tasting Room is going to be really light and really fun, but with the recent fires up in wine country in Sonoma and Mendocino and Napa, I really want to focus on that because I'm interested, too, in hearing the stories of what's happened and where we go from here. So coming up, I have Barry Waite from Tambor Bay Winery, and he's going to tell his story. It's really an amazing story of what happened that night and the following days after the fire. So here we go.
Whether you're a new wine buyer or a seasoned aficionado, choosing the right wine for an occasion can be difficult. Light, heavy, red, white, Chardonnay, Cabernet, it can be overwhelming. But not at Joseph George. Everyone in the shop treats you as part of the family. walking through selections with you to make sure the wine you have for your event, a romantic dinner, or just wanting to learn more is the right choice. Come to Joseph George, 1559 Meridian Avenue in San Jose. Mention KLIV and get 15.9% off your purchase.
All right, Barry, so now we're back on the air. So tell us about your experience. What happened that night of October 8th to you?
Bert, I was woken at 11:30 at night by a phone call from a friend of ours who is related to our horse side of the world. And she informed us that she had heard that there was a fire on Tubbs Lane. And, of course, that's pretty close to my winery, since Tubbs Lane is less than a mile long. And so I called my facilities manager, who was on property. And he said, oh, just by the chance, I was sitting on the porch, and I was just about to call you. And I said, well, what are you looking at? And he says, well, we're looking at some pretty good fire out in the hill. And with that, my heart rate went up. And we kind of assessed at that point that it wasn't totally threatening, but the winds were incredibly strong. And so Ken and I, my wife, decided to jump in the truck, put a horse trailer on the back of it, and we drove from Yountville up to Calistoga to kind of see what was going on. And that was the beginning of a very long week.
Well, so we're speaking with Barry Waite from Tambor Bay. And so tell us about the horses. How many horses did you have, and how in the world did you evacuate them, and where did they all come from?
Yeah, no kidding. So we had about 42 horses on property at the time. It's a combination of horses from the ones that I own. Jen and I own 8 horses. We've got one other vintner keeps horses at our stables. But the large majority of the horses are from the Sunrise Horse Rescue that we run. And so we essentially run the largest horse rescue organization in Napa County.
So you're saying that the horse rescue horses needed to be rescued that night of the October 8th.
The rescued needed to be rescued, and that's it. But not that night, actually. So once we got up there on Sunday night, we kind of assessed that the fire, as we found out through the next day or two, went quickly west and over to Santa Rosa, which is a whole other story. So we felt secure at that point that we didn't need to do anything. And we had thought we had succeeded in coming out of the fire safely. Well, Tuesday rolled around, and then Wednesday at 3 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from my winemaker, Thomas Brown, and he said he just got a call from the mayor of Calistoga and said they're going to do a mandatory evacuation from everywhere from what would be the Toomey Winery, which is about a mile and a half south, all the way up through and including our winery, which is in the very north side of Calistoga. Mandatory evacuation, 3 in the morning.
So this is mandatory. They're not asking you. They're not alerting you. They're saying, get out or we will arrest you. That's mandatory, correct?
Yeah, and in fact, matter of fact, that became very clear over the airways that the mayor had gotten the message out that we don't need people here. We don't want people here. And I found out why later on, because of the severity of the fire, turning back around into the winds again and coming back into town. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, we got to the property, and Jen, my wife, had put a call out to some other friends, and then this cascading effect created a scenario that by 6 in the morning, we had 15 horse trailers show up at our winery, of which we knew nobody. These were just volunteers coming out of the woodwork.
And this is from Facebook or social media somehow?
These are just phone calls. I won't even say Facebook. No one's looking at Facebook at 4 or 5 in the morning.
That's
these are
true.
Phone calls, people saying, there's an emergency, Tambor Bay needs to be evacuated with all these horses. So Jennifer organized this, making sure that these two horses that need to be together stay together. These two horses that could never be together have to be separated. And then we had to find a place for them all to go. And we got a call stating that the Vallejo Fairgrounds were taking horses in because it used to be a race track there. It was kind of run down, but at least it had that facility. So we sent all the horses there, with the exception of our personal horses, to at least be staged. And then from there, over the next 4 or 5 days, they got put in other places. But that was the big effort, is trying to get them out of the property, down the road, and at least in a secure place that they'd be away from the fires.
That is absolutely amazing. So now it's early Wednesday morning, and you have a winery with no power, and you're being told to evacuate. What's happening with the wine? I know you're in with a lot of ferments at the time. You've got a lot of wine fermenting. You have no power, no control over temperatures. You're being told to leave. What do you do?
Well, first I take a deep breath, trying to stay calm. The first thing that we got asked for right in the middle of this is we got asked to do more horse rescues by a local veterinarian that was finding horses that were product of the burn zone. So during that Wednesday, Jennifer and I proceeded to continue to do rescues, and we rescued probably a good 8 or 10 horses that day, and then got them out of the burn zones and got them to safety. But in the meantime, I'm trying to think, what am I going to do with my wine? Because we've got about 17 fermentation tanks full of wine. And important in this part of the process, wine needs to keep moving, whether it's with pump overs or what have you. But without any electricity, things are just now going to start getting crazy in the winemaking. So,
and going out of control, is that what happens? The temperatures go up and the ferments go too high?
Temperatures go up, yep. Ferments can get out of control, or things that were not fermenting, because we want them in a cooler environment, start fermenting all on their own. So a little premature fermentation would be going on. So in one of the trips that we came back up, I grabbed a couple winemakers, and because we're in horse rescue, we kind of went right past the barricades, and I dropped the boys off at the winery. We went and did another horse rescue, came back, and then at that point, they had devised a system to where what we call bucket overs. So instead of using pumps to get juice from the bottom of the tank to the top of the tank and having that continued process, we actually just filled buckets and then walked them up the steps.
Oh, my gosh.
17 fermentation tanks. And each one, we did it for, 15 minutes to a half hour, almost on each tank. And there was two teams doing that, myself and my wife and then our two winemakers.
So that brings the juice, and pops that cap. Is that correct? Is it the
correct. You don't want,
skins
one of the
form
is
a cap up
cap.
On top?
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a cap on top that if it dries out, amongst other things, that could be very bad for the process. So we want to keep that cap moist. And in some cases, we're punching down the cap into the wine. But this this bucket over just allowed the process of the wine to continue to move. We did that, as I said, until our arms fell off. And it also got dark. So
it's the old bucket brigade, but it was for wine.
It was for wine. It was for a great cause.
So you're safe.
And then the next
Everything was safe. You're good that night.
We were good that night, and then we thought we'd repeat the process the next day. But in the morning when I woke up, I said, well, this is ridiculous. I need to find a generator. So we were able to locate a generator out of Sacramento. They said they'd show up about 3 o'clock. Sure enough, I met them in Yountville, jumped in the truck, got through the barricade again, got to the winery with the generator. And I'm not kidding. Within 3 minutes of firing that generator up, the electricity came back on. So there was everybody say, well, at least now you have the generator, which is great. But we had full juice on at that point, to which then we just went crazy, making sure all the tanks were back into temperature, doing pump overs, things of that nature. And that was still
semi-back to normal. Mm-hmm.
And semi-back to normal, except we're still in a quarantine zone. We're not allowed really to be there. But we got special dispensation from the local authorities to allow our wine team in, but it was one of those things that they said, look, in a moment's notice, we may ask you guys, not ask, but tell us to leave.
If the wind shifts again and things like that. Now, tell me, what did the winery look like? Are you working in a bunch of smoke? Is there smoke all around you? What is that like?
Yeah, it was. The valley was very smoky. And so this is a good news, bad news. If there's smoke inside the valley, it means there's no wind. And that's good for the fire and the firefighter because the fires can't spread. But the bad news is the smoke, which at points, I mean, you couldn't see, a quarter mile. It was a bit gagging, and we all had masks on. We had to make sure that during these processes we weren't allowing any ash or anything else to fall into the tanks or anything like that. So we actually double-sealed the tanks all night long. We put big plastic tarps around them and then put essentially big rubber bands around that. So they make sure that none of that infiltrated into the wines.
So at this time, those wines, you had already picked all the grapes, so there's nothing sitting in the vineyards. The smoke isn't sitting on those grapes. It's all inside. It's protected. So 2017 shouldn't affect your wines. Is that right?
It should not. For the wines that are in the tanks, we actually love the 16 vintage, the aromatics, the acidity. Everything about the vintage was really good, certainly up to this point. And so we were doing everything we could to protect all those wines. So we don't foresee any issue with all the wines that were in tank.
Fantastic.
Of course, there's a whole bunch of wines were already in barrel at that point. All our whites and a couple of the Pinot Noirs were already in barrel and inside the barrel room, which are
and so they're safe.
Sealed as well. They're safe. Very safe.
Well, I've
so we
got a question.
A really good 17 vintage.
Oh, great. Well, I've got a lot of people here in the South Bay are asking me, how can they help? What can they do? What would you like to say to the people of the South Bay? I mean, how can we help wine country? How can we help Barry Waite and Tambor Bay? Should we come on up, send people up? What do you want to see?
Well, I think there's a number of ways, Bert. And I think those that are philanthropic, there's a number of organizations throughout, even from the South Bay, activities that even you're spearheading, all the way up to one in Napa Valley that we've supported. Called the Napa Valley Community Disaster Relief Fund.
And that's the one that started after the earthquake, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's been reinvigorated, and a lot of the vintners went and supported them. But, you know, here's kind of the bottom story is the wine region fared very well. This is notwithstanding that a lot of homes got burned, and, you know, it's tragic that that happened, and specifically in Sonoma, not so much in Napa, but it still happened. Very few wineries were affected directly by the fire. What has happened, though, it scared a lot of people away. Well, one, you couldn't get in because of quarantine. But now that the fires are gone and the winds have come back and the smoke is gone, the best thing that can happen is people coming in to visit. Let us show you our wares and hopefully buy our wines. I mean, that's why we're in the business. And we are here to provide, you know, the best wine we possibly can to a large, broad audience of people. So
fantastic.
Right now, I think it's the best time to go up because there's nobody there. I won't call it a ghost town, but if we think of all the people in the South Bay that are product of this this broadcast that's going on, all the people that were flying in and using the hotels and things of that nature, they've canceled all their reservations because of the
it stopped,
of the fire, and maybe rightly so. So I think this is an open agenda for local people to come up for a day. And give us some love. Let us know that you're hearing this broadcast and you're still enjoying our wine. We'd love to see you.
Absolutely, Barry. That's wonderful. And so now is the horse rescue back? Is everything back normal? If we go up to visit you, we could see 42 horses up there?
You can see them all. All the ponies are back. They're all in great shape. All the rescues that we did have all found their resident homes that they could. There were some homes, obviously, that were burned out. They had to find permanent relationships elsewhere. But as far as Tambor Bay is concerned, all our ponies are there. Our staff is now willing or is able to come to work because they were blocked for a while because of roads. So we're at business as usual. And the winery is winding down its activities. All the equipment is getting cleaned out and all the wines are being barreled down. And I think within another week or so, it's going to be pretty quiet up there as far as all the processes of making wine.
So if we get a little Indian summer, we'll send some folks up for sure. Well, Barry, thank you so much.
I
really appreciate you taking your time from beautiful New Orleans to talk to us today.
My pleasure, Bert. Always good to talk to you.
You got it, Barry. Take care.
Whether you're a new wine buyer or a seasoned aficionado, choosing the right wine for an occasion can be difficult. Light, heavy, red, white, Chardonnay, Cabernet, it can be overwhelming. But not at Joseph George. Everyone in the shop treats you as part of the family, walking through selections with you to make sure the wine you have for your event, a romantic dinner, or just wanting to learn more is the right choice. Come to Joseph George, 1559 Meridian Avenue in San Jose. Mention KLIV and get 15.9% off your purchase.
So I want to thank Barry Waite from Tambor Bay for coming on. He took his time to get on the phone with us. He's in New Orleans right now doing another charity event. But I really want to thank him. And he is one of the reasons I thought about doing this type of show. It's the perfect example of, you know, somebody high-end in the wine business. We've sold his wines for many, many years. He's the greatest guy. He has great wines. But you could see his passion for horses, wines, and his community up there. So I want to, again, thanks, Barry. Really appreciate that. So this is Bert George on the KLIV Tasting Room, and I can go over why we're going to do this show. And people like Barry, it's a perfect example. One of the things that we hear all the time, because we do sell very expensive California wines. We sell the best of the best, the hardest to find wines. People feel a little, you know, sometimes put off. It's a little snobby. Well, I want to bring the whole wine business, and this is our lives. We've done this for three generations. I want to bring it down to the common folk. Here's what I want. The best wines should be on every table every night, and I can help you with that. Anybody could find, you know, really, really expensive wines that you might not even enjoy. We want you to come into the shop. We want you to listen to this show, and we want to help you decide. We'll teach you how to actually buy wine. We'll be bringing guests in over the weeks, hopefully, like Barry, a lot of different growers. We can bring in winemakers. We can bring in growers. We can bring in anybody that is really interesting to listen to in the wine biz. Coming up next, we have our first segment of Wine Tasting 101. Each week, we'll bring in a special guest. I'm going to try to teach you how to taste wines, where to taste wines, how to buy wines from restaurants and stores, and that's coming up in the next segment.
Whether you're a new wine buyer or a seasoned aficionado, choosing the right wine for an occasion can be difficult. Light, heavy, red, white, Chardonnay, Cabernet, it can be overwhelming. But not at Joseph George. Everyone in the shop treats you as part of the family, walking through selections with you to make sure the wine you have for your event, a romantic dinner, or just wanting to learn more is the right choice. Come to Joseph George, 1559 Meridian Avenue in San Jose. Mention KLIV and get 15.9% off your purchase.
All right. So our first segment of Wine Tasting 101, like I said, each week we're going to bring in a guest. And then I'm going to do a little segment called Wine Tasting 101. And we're going to teach you how to taste, where to taste, how to buy wines in restaurants and stores. And we'll have a varietal of the week. And so this week, since it's our first one, the most popular varietal in the United States is Cabernet Sauvignon. And I know most of my listeners are going to want to hear about Cabernet Sauvignon. However, we're going to talk about Sauvignon Blanc today, because that's what we grow at our ranch in Yountville. All my neighbors have Cabernet, but we have Sauvignon Blanc because our soils are such that they're very heavy clay, sand, and we knew that Sauvignon Blanc was going to grow much better than Cabernet. So that's what we're going to talk about, Sauvignon Blanc. So Wine 101, Wine Tasting 101, is kind of a beginner's course that can help, I think, anybody. And first is how to taste wine. So bringing it down just to the basic level, wine to me is just another food. And if you think about it that way, you know exactly what you like and what you don't. So how to taste wine to me is pretty easy. Get it in the glass and taste as many different types of wines. Even if we're talking Sauvignon Blanc, you just want to, if you really want to learn, go to the store, buy 2, 3, 4 different Sauvignon Blancs and see the difference. And it is an amazing thing, especially in Sauvignon Blancs from around the world. The word Sauvignon is savage. So all over the world, it's I guess it's French for savage. And it's about the vine itself. Sauvignon Blanc, and I've said this since the very beginning when we planted our first vineyard, we can grow the vine. We can grow one shoot from our little vineyard in Yountville, which is a mile away from the center of town. I think I can grow one vine, the one shoot, all the way to the middle of that town if we just let it go. It's really, that's why they call it savage. It'll just continually go crazy unless you do some very specific things. One of the things that we did is we put a rootstock that was very restrictive with growth. So right off the bat, we're telling that vine to slow down. Just, you're going to have plenty of time to grow. Just slow it down a little bit. Then we get in the vineyard, geez, during the growing season, at least a couple times a week, and really knock these vines down. We just take the growth that we want and knock everything back. We want that the vine to concentrate on growing the fruit, not just a crazy vine. When you get too much canopy, you're not going to get the fruit ripe. And that's another thing about Sauvignon Blanc that you're going to be able to taste. When you have green Sauvignon Blanc, green means it's just not mature enough, you get a lot of the flavors that I don't feel that are attractive. We go toward more of a melon and fig flavor in our Joseph George Sauvignon Blanc because it's more attractive to me. I don't like really aggressive tannin, so I want to get that the skins ripe, those seeds ripe, generally just that grape ripe, so we get more melon and fig and have that beautiful light flavor to it. So, best places to taste. Where do you go? I would hit, obviously, after the fires we've had in Napa and Sonoma and Mendocino, get on the road. If it's a Saturday morning, a Sunday morning, and you don't have anything to do, just hop in the car and just hit wine country, Livermore, anywhere. Just please visit these folks. You know, there's so many people that depend on tourism up there. The restaurants, I've got good friends that own restaurants up in Napa, and they're just starving. It's terrible. So go up and enjoy wines, hit all the wineries. And if you just want to specifically taste Sauvignon Blanc, there's not a whole lot up in Napa. Maybe a winery will have one Sauvignon Blanc, but hit a bunch, just to enjoy. Now, where to buy wine? When you're in restaurants, don't be intimidated by the huge wine lists. What I like to do is no one will know better than your server. When you ask, if you've never been to the restaurant before, what sells best? What do your customers love? They will tell you exactly what they love. And that goes for the wine also. What sells the best? What are you getting great compliments on? That's what you want. You don't have to recreate the wheel there. Just ask them how it's going. Now, when you go into a store, it's a little different story. Most places, we're a very small shop. So you can come up and ask Ruben or myself, you know, what I'm having lamb tonight. What goes with lamb? I'm having, you know, crab tonight. Well, I'd say Sauvignon Blanc for that for sure. But we're there to tell you exactly what's going to go well with those. Having said that, if you're in other stores and you see 1,000 bottles of wine, in the old days it was easy. You'd go and you'd look for a good Chardonnay and there's, you know, 5 Chardonnays. Well, now you've got 100 Chardonnays. You've got 50 Sauvignon Blancs. You've got 200 Cabernets and Pinot Noir. So it's not as easy. So you might want to do a little research before you go into just a regular shop, or just come into my shop and then we'll take care of you. Okay, so let's get into food pairings a little bit. And we'll go with Sauvignon Blanc first, but we can start. Sauvignon Blanc is really at one end of the scale. Sauvignon Blanc has great acidity, so it goes with a lot of different foods. Obviously, seafood is one thing that people think of, lighter fish, crabs, shellfish, and things like that. It actually goes very well with lobster because pairing is a very interesting thing. When you think of lobster, you think of heavy butter, and heavy butter is normally associated with something like Chardonnay. However, a great way to pair things is not only matching it, but going the complete opposite. When you drink Sauvignon Blanc with a beautiful piece of lobster and that thick butter, it cuts that butter and that lobster off of your palate because it has great acidity. And that works really, really well. I really like that when you have an opposite. That will also work. So in general, what you want to do with food pairing is just go from lighter to heavier. If the food is light, think lighter wines. If the food is heavy, think heavier wines. If you're going to have that big steak, obviously a nice cab, a nice Syrah. If you have something in the middle like turkey and maybe ham, Thanksgiving's coming up, that's more Pinot Noir. It's got good acidity, but it's not so big and rich. It's not going to overblow what you're trying to eat. And that's something you want to do. You want to match. You want to go light to light, heavy to heavy, and kind of medium to medium. So that's the food pairings.
Whether you're a new wine buyer or a seasoned aficionado, choosing the right wine for an occasion can be difficult. Light, heavy, red, white, Chardonnay, Cabernet, it can be overwhelming. But not at Joseph George. Everyone in the shop treats you as part of the family, walking through selections with you to make sure the wine you have for your event, a romantic dinner, or just wanting to learn more is the right choice. Come to Joseph George, 1559 Meridian Avenue in San Jose. Mention KLIV and get 15.9% off your purchase.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have, and I hope you got a little bit out of it. Again, my name's Bert George from Joseph George Wines. If you'd like to contact me, my email is easy. It's just my name. It's bertgeorge@msn.com. Our website is josephgeorge.com. And you can always visit us at the store, of course, 1559 Meridian Avenue near Hamilton. In the weeks to come, we're going to have a lot of fun. We will be here next Saturday. I hope you'll tune in to that one. Love to have your feedback. You know, tell us what you want to hear. But being in the business as long as I have, it's really fun. I'm going to be able to bring winemakers, growers. I've got a lot of chefs as buddies. We're going to bring some chefs in so we could talk about wine and food pairing. And we're definitely going to do that next week. I want to thank Barry Wade again from Tambor Bay Winery. The Napa Valley Community Foundation is what he was referencing. Of course, the Red Cross. There's so many ways to give, and so many of you I know have given in the past, and it's wonderful. And we'll see you again next Saturday.
The preceding has been a paid program for the KLIV Tasting Room with Joseph George Fine Wines. Views expressed in the program are those of the host and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers.